This is a Willets Point Shea Stadium bound 7 express train. The next and last stop is Willets Point Shea Stadium.
Yes, it is the Subway to Shea podcast. Anthony Rivera here with you, talking about all the news and happening surrounding that team from Queens, the New York Mets. Episode 136 from the Subway to Shea studios in my office. Don't mind the walls in the office right now because it's under construction at the moment. So there'll be new memorabilia and stuff up there at some point, hopefully before opening day. Huge thanks and shout out to my good friend Justin Fensterman, aka Fensty, who joined the last episode and gave some great analysis on the latest Mets odds, futures, and prop bets. You can catch him on SiriusXM Fantasy and Fantasy Guru. Follow him on Twitter, X, whatever you're calling it these days, at Fensty Sports. And Mets fans, we have made it. It's time. Spring training has come to an end, and we are a couple of days away from opening day. The Mets will open up at home against the Milwaukee Brewers at 1:10 p.m. on Thursday, weather permitting. I have a feeling it's going to be rained out, and they're going to play on Friday because it says it's about like a 90% chance of rain, and Friday looks like a beautiful day. So I would hope that they get that situated quickly. But it's time for the annual Mets season preview, and here to help me break it all down is the one, the only, Lori Rubinson. You can catch Lori hosting on WFAN on Sunday nights between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. Lori, it is an honor and a privilege to have you on the Subway to Shea podcast. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's get right into it because this whole season kind of took a turn, I guess, in the what is termed the 11th hour of the offseason. The Mets signed J.D. Martinez, and you look at his contract, a one-year deal, $12 million, $4.5 million this year, $1.5 million deferred from 2034 to 2038. This changes a lot of things, all right? A 2023 stat, you look at a 271 batting average, 33 home runs, 103 RBIs, and it had an 893 OPS career-wise, 315 home runs, over 1,000 RBIs. He will be the DH for this Mets team, and Carlos Mendoza said he will bat fourth behind Pete Alonso. So finally, in the first time in his career, Pete Alonso has some protection here. And, you know, JD will start the season getting ready in the minors since he missed all his spring training. So probably be about 2 weeks, I think. I think they said he'll probably come up for the Cincinnati series when they go head to Cincinnati. Lori, what did you think of how the Mets were able to get this deal done?
I love this deal. And I know there's been a lot of conversation about the Mets strategy and approach this year. And I think I take them at their word when they said the goal is to be competitive. And I think that's open to interpretation. And some people looked at this season as if it were a throwaway and a rebuild, a reload, a wait until next year. And I know it's hard to do two things at once, but I do think that what we're seeing is that this is a process to try and get the rotation to be younger, not reliant like last year. It was a plan, and coming into the season to have most of your rotation be a 35 plus, you know, age rotation, all that. What we saw was it's not a great plan. And especially in the pitch clock era, it's just not a great plan. And I think this year then was a, how do the Mets take a look at it? David Stearns coming in as the new president of baseball operations. How do the Mets get that rotation younger and build the farm system in a way that it will constantly be supplying players to the major leagues? Yet at the same time, the goal was there are enough good players in their primes on this roster that they should be able to at least be competitive for that third wild card spot, to be in the hunt. And what we've seen in years past is if you can get in, you know, look at the Phillies, look at the Diamondbacks, look at others, the Nationals when they won the World Series, all of that is if you can get in as a wild card card, then you take your chances and you see what happens. You know, it's not always the best team that wins. It's sometimes the hottest team. And so I don't expect that this is a World Series year. I don't think that they think it is, but is it a year where they can be one of those teams in the National League that competes for that third wild card spot? Well, if you introduce a J.D. Martinez suddenly to that lineup, I love it for a few reasons. One is, not only, as you said, protection for Pete Alonso, but I think if we go back to some of the things that were said about J.D. Martinez when he signed on with the Red Sox, you saw he seems to be one of those players, one of those hitters that has a hitting IQ that is just higher than other players, and a really smart hitter that has an approach that elevates not just the guy he's protecting, but the entire lineup. So I hope we will see a J.D. Martinez effect and impact on the entire lineup with just a better, smarter approach.
I liked when you said, you know, you were taking what, you know, Stearns and Cohen was saying at face value, because I've been doing the same thing all offseason through every presser, trying to pay as close attention as possible to what they were telling the media. And I do feel like they really told the truth about how they were going to handle this situation. They said they were going to give the kids an opportunity to play. They got most of spring to do it. But they also said if the price was right, if the opportunity was right, that they would go out and sign a free agent. And now we have J.D. Martinez. The price was right. And unfortunately for, you know, Mark Vientos, who, you know, he didn't really light it up during spring. He was okay. 232, a batting average, 5 home runs, 9 RBIs. But I think that, you know, bringing in a guy like J.D. Martinez, you know, on day one, he has that impact. Not only his presence on the field, you mentioned his IQ at bat, but the leadership he has, the mentorship that he could have with a guy like Mark Vientos, who he said that they kind of worked together, you know, in the offseason, which I think is very important as well. But, you know, he took him aside. You saw pictures and videos of him with his, you know, arm around his shoulder and everything. Vientos obviously is going to be upset. I mean, that's a given. We all thought that he was going to be the DH. And, you know, he kind of, during his press conference, J.D. Martinez kind of compared the start of his career to Mark Vientos and how, you know, he kind of didn't get off to that hot start. It took him a couple of years. And then finally he got into a lineup and he sustained it ever since. Was this the right move, or should the Mets at least carry Mark Vientos until J.D. Martinez is ready? I know J.D.'s out, but Mark Vientos is not going to be on the roster. They already said that he's going to be sent down. You think that was the right move in not carrying him for at least a couple of weeks so that he could get his footing, and then they send them down to AAA for when J.D. Martinez comes up?
So two things there. The first is, I think people have wondered, why did they sign J.D. Martinez as opposed to giving Mark Vientos an opportunity? And the way I looked at that was, they're already giving one young player an opportunity that's a question mark in Brett Beatty at third base. And as well as Francisco Alvarez did last year, and I think he surpassed expectations, but still, he's a young player. This will be the second year. I think both Beatty and Alvarez need to show that, and Beatty in particular, that they, you know, that they can handle being in a Major League Baseball lineup. I think Alvarez, absolutely. I'm expecting, frankly, him to go from good to great in so many ways. He showed us so much with the defense last year, and obviously 25 home runs. I think it's an opportunity for Alvarez now to up it in on base percentage or batting average, get on more. There's, you know, some upside there to see. For Beatty, we need to see him be, Brett Beatty, to be, take some of what he did across all levels in the minor leagues and now bring that to the major leagues. Well, now, if you were to put Mark Vientos as a staple in this lineup, so now you'd have, you know, I mean, I think Mets fans are hoping that Brett Beatty will hit for power, will get on base, will have a decent average, all of that. I think you're hoping that. But if you had Vientos in that lineup, and we're hoping that Francisco Alvarez will, in addition to the home runs, the pop, the defense, all of that, will, you know, raise the average a little bit, the on-base percentage a little bit, get on base. If you put Vientos in here, and all three of them are lineup staples. You now could be looking at a lineup where, while they're figuring it out and working through some of that, you could have three spots in a lineup where you've got three players with well below average on base percentage. And that feels like a lot to have in one season for a team, unless you are. Look, if you're the Washington Nationals, you know, then go ahead. But the Mets are in New York City trying, you know, and have so many players. This is still a lineup that has Pete Alonso and Francisco Lindor and Brandon Nimmo and Jeff McNeil. This is still a team that has that lineup and all those other players. So I agree with that. Trying to break in that many young players at the same time was one too many, probably. So that's one. In terms of sending Vientos down, I'll admit I was a little surprised by that. I thought they would keep him on the roster and give him this opportunity for a couple of weeks, and then bring JG Martinez up and send him down. However, you said before, you and I both are listening to David Stearns. Listen to him and take him at his word. And I think that I think what this is about is maintaining as much depth in the organization as possible, and that there were players like a Zach Short that they found interesting that are out of options that they wanted to keep on the roster and see how he does over these, you know, next few weeks and see what goes on there. And so I think it was a little bit of that. And then, as opposed to with a Vientos, and maybe I'm speculating here, but do they want him to be around the JD Martinez for a couple of weeks while the two of them, you know, are working together and getting some work together? Maybe there's some of that. I'm not sure. I was a little surprised. I thought they would give, as a reward for the 5 home runs in spring training and being a good sport about this, that they would let Vientos have until, call it, April 7th. That's 10 days when Martinez will probably be up and back. I thought they would go with Vientos, but I think they are, I think they wanted to start him in the minor leagues, not yo-yo him back and forth. And I think David Stearns is clear that at some point, Mark Vientos will be up on this roster. He will be playing for the Mets and playing Major League Baseball in, 2024. And the one guy, I do think that Brett Beatty should consider himself a little bit on notice. Like, this is your job, but Vientos should be there starting every day at third base in the minor leagues. And Beatty should, look, he's got, 2 months or something to show that he can hit in the majors. If he has another one of these nervous seasons, at some point, you can't let him have most of last year and all of this year to keep, languishing without giving Vientos an opportunity at third base.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything that you're saying right now. And, the fact that having all of these kids in the lineup, I don't know if that was ever really 100% in the plans. Maybe it was it's the last resort. If the kids have to play and we can't get anyone else, that's fine. But the longer that these free agents stayed out there and the less money that they were taking, I think it just benefited the Mets more. And unfortunately for Vientos, I just think he's a hard luck loser here. I feel if the Mets had signed someone like, say, Justin Turner, maybe to play third, that the foot would be on the other side. Maybe Brett Beatty would be on the outs looking in, because Pat Ragazzo mentioned it today, Sports Illustrated and Fan Nation. He said that the Mets had offered Justin Turner a contract at the winter meetings. So I don't know how long of a leash Brett Beatty has, but like you said, I think that Vientos gets reps at third, and he will be the next in line in case, because obviously they're going to go to Zach Short and see what he could do. Joey Wendell will get some time at third, but Brett Beatty, I think he's on borrowed time if he just doesn't start clicking at some point. You mentioned the bench, and you mentioned Zach Short making it the team. Obviously, we said Mark Vientos is out. Jose Iglesias and G-Man Choi didn't make it. Surprised that both Iglesias and Choi took assignments to go to AAA, which is great for us. More depth. I'll take that any day of the week. Zach Short had a great spring, batted 300, one home run, which I think was a grand slam, 8 RBIs and 3 stolen bases. Although he's a career 174 hitter in 177 games. Unfortunately, he found out the morning of that his grandmother passed away. So condolences and thoughts and prayers out to his family. DJ Stewart is heading up north with the Mets, but he hasn't made made the roster yet. David Stearns mentioned that he could be looking to add outside of the organization to add another player for the bench. He really didn't have a good spring. 175 batting average, one home run, one RBI. So right now, as is, the bench is Omar Narváez, Joey Wendell, Tyrone Taylor, and Zach Short. Wendell and Short are somewhat similar as these infield type guys. So that's where a little bit of the, I guess, I don't want to say confusion, but just trying to understand the move.
Head scratching.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I did the same thing. I looked at that and thought there's redundancy to me with Wendell and Short. So what are they doing there? And that's where Vientos made more sense to me than like a Short. But, you wonder if with both Short and Wendell, are they going to get an opportunity in some capacity over these next first few weeks? And then almost like may the best man win there of whoever's kind of playing better. Because I agree with you. It seems like a weird bench to me that Taylor makes sense as the fourth outfielder. I totally get that. Good player. No issue. Narváez is the backup catcher, of course. Get that. Need one infielder, backup infielder. And that seems to me to be either Wendell or Short. And then you would think there would be that one other player that was a little bit more of a bigger bat, home run threat, whatever it was. And that's where, whether it was a Vientos or a Choi or whatever, like somebody like that makes a little more sense to me to balance the bench. So it feels like redundancy. That was the one weird thing, is Short and Wendell feel redundant to me.
And I thought that G-Man Choi was the possibility. Obviously, you mentioned his power. Also can spell, Pete Alonso at first base. I mean, who's going to play first base? I guess you could throw McNeil there. He could play wherever. Wendell, I don't know. It just feels like there's no backup for Pete if he needs a day off, or they're going to throw him at DH. But we'll see how that works out. I assume that DJ Stewart will stay because of what you mentioned. There needs to be a power bat threat at DH. I don't know where I read it, but there are not that many left-handed pitchers from the time now until, I think it may have been a Will Salmon article from The Athletic, that there's not a left-handed starting pitcher or as many bullpen pieces so that you can carry a guy like DJ Stewart and he could be the DH.
The first couple series, that's another point. Yeah, I saw the same thing. In the first couple series, the Mets are playing not as many left-hand starters and left-handed bullpen pieces. So that's another reason for Mark Vientos potentially being sent down, if they're viewing him as a guy that they were seeing more platoon split, that they wanted to send him down. So I guess what I would say is, I think the makeup of the bench is to be determined.
Yeah.
and I'm not sold that, to your point. Fast forward, we know JD Martinez will be on there, barring injury, short-term injury. Would it surprise you if come, April 15th, May 1st, that there is a bench that has just one of Wendell or Short with backup catcher Taylor in the outfield and a guy like Choi potentially as that other bench piece?
Yeah, no, I think so. I think that, as Stearns has preached, defensive oriented run prevention, and that's what we're getting right out the gate. We also have to remember that JD Martinez, as great as he was last season, only played in 113 games. So at some point, like you said, we will probably see a Mark Vientos up here and playing for this team. I hope that he stays healthy and he can play a lot of games, but we got to go with the results that we've already seen.
Yeah.
And he's got the bad back, and that's something that, obviously we have to be concerned about. The Mets lineup, the projected lineup from Anthony DeComo of MLB.com has Nimmo leading off, Francisco Lindor at second, Alonso third, Jeff McNeil batting cleanup. I don't understand it. Starling Marte, then Brett Beatty, then Alvarez, Stewart, and Bader.
I would look at it, the way I would look at that when you say you don't understand is, imagine that lineup and take Stewart out, and when JD Martinez is with the Mets, and we know he's going to be that Pete insurance. So now slot him into fourth. Now put Jeff McNeil actually as a left-handed bat coming off of the righties at fifth. And suddenly that lineup works. And now you've got Harrison Bader batting ninth to be that speed guy at the bottom of the lineup before you flip it to the top. So suddenly that makes a lot more sense and the whole thing fits together. So I wouldn't be so worried about, we'll see what happens opening day until April 7th. But when Martinez gets there, I think the whole lineup starts to make a lot of sense.
Well, this was my ideal lineup once Martinez comes back. So I had Nimmo, Lindor, Alonso, Martinez, like you said, McNeil, Alvarez after that, Marte, Beatty, and then Bader. I moved Marte down because unless he's 2022 Marte, I don't know. And watching him throughout the spring, I didn't see too many balls leave the infield with him. I'm a little concerned. He says he's 100% healthy, and we'll see what happens once we get into regular season games. But, you know, him off the start, McNeil not playing too many games in spring, it is a little concerning to me. I've even toyed with, you know, eventually moving both Nimmo, who, if he shows the power that he did last year, I think he can move down the lineup, and McNeil also down the order if Marte can kind of get that 2022. Because honestly, I think that Starling Marte is the ideal leadoff guy because he can steal bases. And that's something that concerns me with Brandon Nimmo. He just doesn't steal any bases.
Yeah, I hear you. honestly, I'm going to disagree on this for a few reasons. One, to me, the ideal leadoff hitter is, well, first of all, the most important thing is this guy who gets on base. And Brandon Nimmo, I think, has a high on base percentage. So I like that. I'm fine with him as a leadoff hitter. Yes, would I ideally love a guy who has a high on base percentage and is a threat for a stolen base? You don't even have to steal a ton to be a threat because you're disruptive to the pitcher. So that I really like. But I want a guy who's going to get on base, take some pitches, so the rest of the lineup sees that a little bit first time around. After the first time around, honestly, leadoff hitter or not, you may not lead off an inning for the rest of the game. True. So it's about being on base. And I think it's in some ways less important to be stealing bases when you have the big bats coming up that have power and that can drive, you know, you're almost, if Pete Alonso's at the plate, you're in scoring position when you're standing on first base. So it's like, I want guys who are going to be on base. And yes, I would like Brandon Nimmo to steal a few more bases. In terms of Marte and Alvarez and the rest of the lineup, yeah, Marte is a really important cog. If he plays well, what we've seen it, this lineup transforms in a lot of ways. But, and the best, I hear what you're saying throughout spring training, you know, didn't seem like he was hitting the ball hard. I don't know if you watched, I'm sure you did, but on Sunday, I will say he had that double. I think probably the best ball that I saw him hit all spring was that looked like legitimately like, all right, maybe a little something here. Maybe he's moving a little better. Maybe this is good. So let's see. But yeah, I'm probably also somebody who is less fixated on, you know, kind of the batting order in some ways. I want my best hitters getting up as many at bats as possible. I'm more focused on that than I am exactly where somebody, you know, shows up in the order.
Well, they definitely have the right four if you're going to give at bats to. That's definitely those four at the top once Martinez returns. I don't know. It's just, it's that, you know, Jose Reyes style leadoff hitting that I guess I kind of miss seeing and we haven't had for a long time.
It would be nice to have somebody who can, you know, get on base and steal a lot of bases. That would be great. But if you want to talk about JD Martinez and his health and, you know, 113 games or whatever, even if Starling Marte is healthy right now, I mean, how many games, healthy games, are you banking on at this point in his career for Marte?
Yeah, yeah. And I wouldn't be shocked also if he starts off, you know, as the DH and they put Tyrone Taylor in right field to play a couple of games. I wouldn't be shocked if they do something like that until JD Martinez comes back. Once again, I'm here with the great Lori Rubenson, host on WFAN. You can listen in on Sunday nights between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. Let's move to the rotation here. And it's not a star-studded rotation, doesn't have an ace, but a lot of ifs, if all goes right and these guys play to their potential, these guys can compete. Jose Quintana, Luis Severino, Tylor Megill, Sean Manaea, Adrian Hauser, Kodai Senga starting on the IL with the right shoulder inflammation. I assume that he'll be back around mid-May, end of May, sounding with Mendoza had talked about him getting ready to throw next week. So take their time. don't want them to rush him back and, you know, re-aggravate whatever with the shoulder. But who are you intrigued by the most in this rotation? This is like a three-part question. Who are you intrigued by the most? Who can be the X factor? And who has the most to prove?
Well, in some ways, I'll start off by saying maybe I'll pick the same answer for all three. I'll get to who has the most to prove later. But let's focusing on it. I'll say Luis Severino. And I think Luis Severino is I'm most intrigued by. I think he has the most upside. And I think he has in many ways can be the linchpin. Because I look at this staff and yes, assume they get Senga back, you hope at some point. But if I ask you the question, you know, if this team is going to be a compete for that third wildcard spot, who is going to give them, ace level or number two starter level type of results, dependable results, quality, you know, better than quality starts, be the stopper when you lose a couple games and he pitches and puts an end to a losing streak. You know, who's going to be that guy? And I just think that stuff-wise potential, Luis Severino has that talent. Now, you used the word if before, and I remember, I don't know how many seasons ago this was, but there was a year with the Mets where one of the seasons that of the many that went south, call it 5 years ago or whatever the heck it was. But I remember coming into a season talking on WFAN, you know, people call into my show and people were saying, well, if this happens and if this happens and if this happens, you know, the Mets are going to be really good this year. And I remember calling them the New York Ifs. I said, let's just change the name. Instead of the Mets, they'll be the New York Ifs. There's too many ifs here for my liking. And so there are a lot of ifs in that starting rotation. But yeah, what I guess is a positive, if you want to be an optimistic Mets fan, is that in addition to the five pitchers you mentioned, so at some point you hope Senga comes back and pitches well. But that is where, now back to who has the most to prove, you could say it's a Severino who's pitching for a contract, and it could be him. But I also think Tylor Megill. Megill is at a point in his career where he was handed that number five spot in the rotation. And when I say handed, he had a nice spring training. But if we're just going to be on merit, probably Buto pitched best. Mm-hmm. And yet, okay, they're giving based on experience. They're saying Tylor Megill, this is your spot. Okay, but you know what? Jose Buto, Joey Lucchese, at some point David Peterson comes back. And then, like a lot of Met fans who may have watched in spring training or read up on it or whatever, there are all those prospects from the draft of 2021. And, you know, there are three good pitching prospects sitting there that Christian Scott, probably the most noteworthy, that has scouts buzzing about him. There's some now bubbling up young pitching talent there. So if you're Tylor Megill, next season there are a number of good free agent pitchers that'll be on the market, guys who are not, you know, 35 plus. If you figure the Mets may want to go after one of those. And this rotation, other than Senga, is going to be kind of wide open. And you figure David Stearns is a guy who has a reputation for developing pitching, identifying pitching, finding pitching. And, you know, if he goes out and gets and signs one big free agent pitcher next year, plus you have a Senga and one or two of these kids are ready, well, it's Tylor Megill and maybe a Luis Severino pitches well and they re-sign him or whatever, or a Sean Manaea pitches well and they re-sign him, you know, whatever it is. But now is the season. If you're Tylor Megill and you don't show that you can be a reliable starting pitcher this season for the New York Mets, even if it's a back of the rotation guy, but if you can't consistently be that guy now this season when they need you, then don't think that that spot's going to be available to you next year with the Mets. And if it's not, like, I think he's at a pivotal point in his career if he wants to be a major league starter.
I think that exactly how you said that the way that this team is going to build the rotation next season, because, you know, only Senga is signed through next year. And, you know, a lot of fans like, oh, we got to go after Alonso and we got to go after Soto. And now we got to rebuild the rotation. I think it's like you said, maybe one free agent starter, maybe one of the top end guys. And then maybe Buto slots in here. If Tylor Megill shows that he can, you know, sustain being in the rotation, he stays in. Maybe they bring up one of the kids and then they do what they did this year and get find one of these guys like a Manaea or you know, like Luis Severino, like they did, who at the beginning of the offseason, I said, if there's one guy I want to take a chance on, it's Luis Severino. More I wanted it for the back end of the rotation, and now he's all the way up, but he was one of the guys that I really wanted to take a chance on. So if they can, you know, get these kids to where they have to be, and I don't know, I feel like Jose Buto is, he might be one of these X factors that comes up at some point. I mean, he looked outstanding in spring training, and it goes all the way back to the last half of the season in August and in September. I mean, I was at the game. I think he pitched the 21-3 loss to the Braves, and he kind of looked lost there. They send him down, they bring him back up once the trade deadline was over, and he was a totally different pitcher. Quality starts, quality innings, not giving up more than two or three runs. So if Buto can be a part of this rotation, and you know, then we see like a Christian Scott or a Vassell, a Hamill, one of these guys, and then they add another, maybe a frontline starter, but this has a chance to be a very solid rotation. And I'm sure, just like you said, David Stearns finds his ways to figure this out. He will figure this out, and he has a history of putting, you know, rotations together and piecing them together. He also pieced together the bullpen, right? Edwin Diaz is back. He looked great all spring. He re-signed Adam Ottavino, which I did not hate. I'll be honest with you. I didn't think he was as bad as everyone made him out to be last season, although he did. Yes, he did blow big games, but now he's back in a spot where he belongs. Go alongs with Brooks Raley. You got Jake Diekman. I love having two lefties in the bullpen. Jorge Lopez, Drew Smith. And then you got the final two spots, which will either be Sean Reed Foley, Michael Tonkin, a combination with a Johan Ramirez. They're all fighting for that final two spots. Lori, who are you carrying to Queens? Who are the two guys you want to see them bring up?
Definitely Michael Tonkin. I think that this is a guy, you know, pitched for the Braves last year. And I think David Stearns also talks about wanting different, that a bullpen composition is also about different arm angles, giving you different looks or whatever. I think Tonkin gives you a different look. So to me, I don't even, we'll see what the Mets do, but I don't think this should be three guys for two spots. I think I would have Tonkin in. He'd be in my bullpen. Yeah. So now I'm talking about two guys for one spot. And is that Sean Reed Foley or is that Johan Ramirez? And my issue with Sean Reed Foley is really more about health. And I just worry, you know, if you're the problem with those two guys, as opposed to some of the other younger guys or guys with more upside or different guys who you may have sent down because they had options, is that this to me is the last spot in the bullpen. It's the, you know, 25th, 26th man on the roster, whether you have your last, you know, bench guy and your last bullpen guy, you know, or the end of the roster. It's going to probably be a churn at some point, you know, it might churn off the roster or whatever, but I don't know. I worry about trusting Sean Reed Foley and his injury history last year. And even, you know, as well as he pitched in spring training, there it was, the back locking up or whatever. Like, so if I had to pick, I'm probably not going with him just based on, I don't know if I trust him to be healthy.
Yeah, I originally had Tonkin and Ramirez in there with Sean Reed Foley kind of inching his way. As soon as he got hurt during the spring, I said, I've seen this way too many times. And, you know, if he makes it through waivers, great. We'll bring him back. It's happened before. It could happen again, and we'll have him in there.
Yeah, great. Would love him in the minors. Let's hang on to him and have him for depth. But I'm with you. As soon as I was in the, I'm not sure based on injury history, and then okay, maybe, and then as soon as he got hurt, it was like, oh, it's bad. Forget it. I've seen this movie before.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like we get him for a couple of weeks. He pitches well. He's out. He comes back. He doesn't pitch as well because he's not 100% healthy. He's back out again. And like it's happened over, what did we get? I think we got, was it 2021 we got him? It was in the Steven Matz deal. So it was 2021. And it's been the same every season. It's like how much do you go back to the well over and over again?
That's why. So I'm in the same place you are, is based on that, I'm going with the other guys. And then of course, like probably, yeah, I'm sure every Mets fan is just absolutely intrigued by the upside of Shintaro Fujinami, the Japanese pitcher who was super, super wild.
Yes.
One last appearance in spring training where I was all excited watching this guy or whatever. And that day I went, this isn't good. I'm like afraid, I don't know. He looked like Wild Thing. He was throwing the ball over the yard. But I still think I saw this guy at times out of the bullpen with Baltimore last year, and you see the upside potential. And this is where the Mets pitching lab and, let analytics and the pitching lab and Hefner and all these guys work some magic, work on him, get him to be able to repeat mechanics, harness some of that talent, because at some point, maybe it's him. But you mentioned Ottavino. When I look at the bullpen, not only is Edwin Diaz back, but I do think that guys like, you would hope, like a Jorge Lopez and others, that there's some guys with upside potential here to be more of those dependable late inning guys. And so with Brooks Raley and Jorge Lopez and others, and maybe even a Tompkin, who we're calling the end of the bullpen, but let's see. Ottavino, to me, if you can make him your more of a middle inning guy that's just a guy in your bullpen, then I think you're fine. And then he's really smart and he's a good guy to have around and all of that. But the, when you're looking at him to sometimes be in there and trying to save a game and be a closer or the bat, he's an ninth inning guy. That's where I feel like where he's miscast.
Yeah. And I think with Hefner and with Stearns, they'll figure out some type of program to figure out where best suited each of these pitchers can go. Maybe, every couple of times it's Ottavino in the eighth, and then you got Raley, Diekman. I've been wanting two lefties in the bullpen for so long, two competent lefties, and I feel like we finally have it. I know Diekman had a tough season last year, but I feel like now we finally have that. A lot of potentials in Drew Smith, who I'm not the biggest fan of, but he's still young. See what he can get. But, having Edwin Diaz back, what are your thoughts on just seeing him come back that first game that he came back, striking out the side? I know it's spring training, but it's just like a feel good moment, I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of Mets fans felt emotionally like the season just crumbled, crippled, when people watched him just, get injured and go down during the World Baseball Classic. And it just cast a pall over the season. And yeah, the bullpen was out of whack after that. It was probably thin anyway, but not having him there just made it all worse. So yeah, I don't think Mets fans should expect him to be 2022 Edwin Diaz, only because it's right up there amongst the greatest relief pitching seasons of all time. It was so brilliant. So to expect somebody to be that every year seems, maybe not plausible, but to be still one of the better relief pitchers in all of baseball, to have a guy like that, I think there is a confidence factor that permeates. It just elevates the entire bullpen and roster. Everybody feels a little bit more confident. And if he can just be really, really good Edwin Diaz instead of like best in baseball Edwin Diaz, but still really good Edwin Diaz, then the roster starts to feel like, hey, this is an 8-inning game for our side. Like if we can get a lead after 8, we feel really, really good about it. And I don't think you felt like that last year. And so now suddenly the hitters maybe don't feel like they're pressing as much and all of that. It has a confidence factor for an entire roster. And so, yeah, I think it's huge for the psyche of the ball club.
Yeah, most definitely the rotation, the hitters, that whole entire team. I think he's the heart and soul of that team. And you can really see it that they missed him 100% throughout that entire season.
You know who else he's really important for is a new manager. If you're Carlos Mendoza, I just think, Joe Torre, look, I'm not going to say, of course, nobody's saying that Diaz is Mariano Rivera. There's only one Mariano Rivera, and you have to do it as often and as long as he did successfully in the playoffs as well in the postseason to be Mariano Rivera. But Joe Torre, when he came to the Yankees after not having been particularly successful manager elsewhere, you look so much smarter as a manager when you have a good closer. And when you don't have a good closer and you're blowing games at the end, blowing saves, blowing leads, suddenly the manager looks like an idiot. Now he's scrambling to try and find something else. Now the whole ball club underconfident psyche, you know, morale, whatever. And if you have a closer that everybody trusts, including the manager suddenly is more confident and looks smarter. So I think he's huge, Edwin Diaz, for a young new manager.
Lori, before I let you go, I want to get your quick thoughts on this. It was just announced that the Mets are going to be wearing a patch in honor of Buddy Harrelson this season. Very nice patch with the diamond and Buddy and three. You know, what are your thoughts just on real quick on the, you know, on his career and, you know, basically, he was kind of like a Mr. Met almost. He spent his whole career with the Mets, and mostly, I mean, I know he got traded at the end of his career, but like he was there for both World Series, you know, whether it was playing as a coach, he even managed the team for a little bit. So what are your thoughts on Buddy Harrelson?
First of all, I love that the Mets are honoring him. I think it's fantastic and, you know, well done by ownership, who I think that Steve Cohen, Steve and Alex Cohen as owners, I think there's a get it factor now by ownership of an appreciation for Mets history and how much Mets history means to the fans and to former players. And so I think they're doing things like that right. And I really appreciate that, what Steve and Alex Cohen are doing from an ownership standpoint. And, you know, when I think of Buddy Harrelson, I think there's a lot of Mets fans that the first thing they think about is Buddy Harrelson famously fighting Pete Rose. but there's a, you know, everybody thought of Pete Rose as being, you know, Charlie Hustle, scrap, you know, hard-nosed player or whatever. It just showed you Buddy Harrelson's, like, I'm not an advocate for anybody getting into a fight or whatever, but that scrappiness and competitiveness of Buddy Harrelson, and he wasn't going to back down from anybody, even if, you know, Pete Rose was bigger and was going to kick his butt, he was just not going to back down from anybody. And so I think that, Mets fans just have a really, as you pointed out, for a lot of years and a long time, Buddy Harrelson was a constant with this franchise. And I think that he's a player and, you know, coach and manager that the fans have a lot of, you know, one of our own feeling for a lot of people. And because he did span such a time, obviously, if you're a Met fan in your 20s, you might not feel like he's our guy. You don't know him as well. But I think if you're a Met fan of a certain age, you know, if the teams of the 80s were your teams, then, you know, you can relate to Buddy Harrelson. If you're a Mets fan and you go all the way back to the, you know, 73 and, you know, and you go back to, you know, way back when with the Mets, then he's also your guy and you remember him as a player. And so I think that he crossed generations, and you know, he certainly is a player and person that I think a lot of Mets fans hold in with a lot of affection and regard, and to, you know, with his passing, to pay tribute to him and honor him with a patch. I think it's a good sign of the way ownership kind of understands their fan base.
Lori, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. Let everyone know where they can interact with you, because you're always so good at responding and commenting on X. You're one of the fans, and it's always good, even our interactions. I really appreciate. Let everyone know that where they can interact.
So yeah, the best, obviously tune in WFAN on Sunday nights, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. And you can also listen on the Odyssey app, free Odyssey app. So if you miss the show, you can listen that way and listen online. But you also, if you miss the show, you can always head on over there and listen the next day, all of that. So that's always great. And then, yeah, I really enjoy interacting with people on X, on Twitter, at L Rubinson, and really enjoy interacting with people there. And I love when people call the show. So I encourage fans, please, you know, call me. I find it, I love that. So if you have questions, if you have comments, either on Twitter or X, or calling me on WFAN on Sunday nights when I'm on air, is I always envision keeping people company. And so you all, by calling in, keep me company. It's part of what makes it fun. And it makes us a sports community within, you know, as big as New York and the whole world is. I feel like we have a really lovely and wonderful sports community there on WFAN. So anyway, really appreciate everybody who interacts with me.
Lori, again, thanks so much. It was great meeting you at the QBC. I look forward to it next year and speaking with you again as well. You have a great night.
Thanks so much. Take care.
All right. That was Lori Rubinson, host on WFAN. Listen in on Sunday nights between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. Great interactions, a lot of fun. Make sure to check it out. And you can follow me on X, Instagram, and TikTok at Subway to Shay. Listen, subscribe to the Subway to Shay podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can watch and subscribe on YouTube. That will wrap up this show. Thanks everyone for listening in or watching, because I'll post that as well. Make sure you enjoy your opening day and opening week of baseball. The Mets are back, baby. Let's go Mets.